Hi, everybody. Hope this finds you well. You find me in Scotland, actually. I returned to the homeland yesterday to visit family. Got to go on a little bit of a road trip around Scotland. So apologies if the sound quality of my intros is not up to its usual standard. But this is life on the road with soundtracking. But fear not, we still have an incredible collection of guests coming up for you over the next couple of weeks. But our guest this week on Soundtracking is a composer who provided the music for, I would say, one of the water cooler TV series of 2021. I am, in case you're wondering, talking about The Serpent. I love this show so much, for which Dominic Scherer has delivered a properly brilliant soundscape. Now, based on true events, The Serpent tells the story of serial killer Charles Sobhraj, who murdered young tourists in Thailand between 1975 and 2000. As well as Dominic's fantastic score, the show also features tons of needle drops from the era, of which more shortly. But first, I wanted to talk to you about Masterclass, which I've been watching and learning from for the last few months now. Masterclass offers online tuition across a range of fields from some of the best known names in their respective professions. Now, I've been using it as a wonderful research tool for work and life, and it's utterly fascinating. I've learned tips on my photography from Annie Leibovich, got an amazing insight into independent filmmaking from Spike Lee, while the Roxane Gay course is incredibly insightful on writing for social change. It's the most incredible way of learning skills from some of your favourite people in the world. It's totally immersive and the quality is really impressive. Masterclass is the online education subscription service offering over 100 courses across so many subjects, from cooking, gardening, acting, to a plethora of other subjects. Each of the courses is broken out into 10 to 20 minute lessons that are easy to fit into your daily life, and you can watch from any of your devices. I would highly recommend you check it out. Get unlimited access to every masterclass, and as a Soundtracking listener, you get 15% off an annual membership. So go to masterclass.com/sound. That's masterclass.com/sound for 15% off Masterclass. And so to Dominic, himself a master of his art, and we'll begin with his cue from The Serpent, Herman in the Rain.
Hello.
Hey, how are you? I'm so sorry about last week. I had my mum and dad were on their way down, and they were involved in a not a serious accident, but it was just one of those things where it was.
Oh no, are they okay?
Everyone was absolutely fine. So yeah, but thank you so much for your patience and being able to facilitate more time for me to chat to you. Thank you so much.
That's all right.
I love The Serpent. I want to start straight on that, if that's okay, because I am. I had the pleasure of chatting to the brilliant Jenna Coleman about her incredible performance. So I got sent it before it aired here in the UK anyway. Oh, it was incredible. So great. But let's talk a little bit about your journey with this specifically, and then that kind of maybe encourage us to talk about how you work project to project anyway as a composer. But with this, I imagine there was a lot of different things to consider, or tell me if there were, be that, you know, it's an episodic TV format, it's based on true events, it's a specific genre, it has a style to it, it also the location and the cultural colours and landscape of that. Were all those things that you did consider when you were thinking about the score for it?
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, you have to, I don't know, there's a few things in there that you mentioned, yeah. But you have to, you know, have to think about, you know, location. Yes, of course, you know, because we wanted it to be kind of exotic, you know, so to have a sort of this exotic, I guess, sort of appeal or the excitement, you know, of this being elsewhere. And maybe, you know, this is parallel with maybe the excitement of the young travelers who went out there and, you know, experienced that, you know, to maybe kind of get some of that excitement back. And then it being, you know, episodic. Yes, I mean, you know, that's, I do a lot of that, basically. I mean, it's for me, it's, I like it because, you know, you have, it's a playground of,
yeah,
8 episodes, you know, you can develop the themes slowly and then bring them back. And, you know, people kind of like these recurring themes. And when you then sometimes refer back to the title theme in the middle, people sort of think like, oh yeah, that must be an important moment.
Where did you start with it?
Quite early. So I had the script and worked with the script because I always make sure I've got some music ready when they start shooting. Not for them to shoot, but because the edit starts when they're starting shooting, you know, or at least, you know, the assembly editing. So I think it helps if some of my music already starts to, you know, be in the cut at an early stage rather than using, you know, just temp music, any kind of other music, because they need some music with it. So I started to, so this was in summer 2019.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you talk about the almost luxurious element of working on an episodic format. You know, in terms of like being a playground, I love that notion of it as well. And what's great as well, like you talk about, when do you know when things are going to be recurring, like themes or motifs or just elements that they may kind of come back and stuff? Is that a conversation you have with, you know, with the director in terms of specifics of what he's looking for?
Yes, but also, you know, a lot of it was, I guess, came out because I know Tom Shankland, the lead director, quite well, because he was lead director on Ripper Street, on The Missing, and we did some other productions together, on The City and The City. So we've worked on quite a lot of shows together. And so I know what he, you know, likes or how he wants to approach it. So a lot of that, you know, with The Serpent, a lot of the scoring, particularly when we then had the episodes together, we didn't actually really talk any further. You know, I know it sounds strange, but because we were so aligned by then, you know, that it was almost a kind of automatic process. But for early on, yes, I mean, you know, and some of it is just playing around, you know, sort of seeing, and because that's the good thing about starting early, because you can go to some bold places where, you know, sort of think, oh yeah, let's try some crazy vocal or vocoder or something. I don't know. So I did, there is some crazy stuff I did, which never made it, you know, so that was just too much, or it was unsuitable. But there was other stuff that is in there, and it's quite exciting. And I think you can only really do that when you start early, you know, and then you have room to play like that.
Then kind of are you privy to performance and to watching any rushes to kind of, you know, get a feel of the chemistry between people and the tone of performances and things like that? How important is that?
Yeah, you mean the actress performances?
Yeah,
totally, very much so. And also it was, you know, I actually went on location as well. I went to Thailand and,
amazing.
You know, and then, you know, also met, you know, kind of, you know, hung out with Jenna and Tahar and, you know, just so to get, and, you know, see the locations and all that. So, so that was quite an important part. I mean, it's always, I mean, so that was actually nice to meet them quite early on, because often I get to meet the actors like at the premiere or something, you know, and then I feel like I know them really quite intimately, because I'm sometimes scoring their little move in the face, and you know, I analyze their performance and all that. So I feel like, and then I sort of go up to them and sort of say, introduce myself, and I'm composer, blah, blah, and I'm a sort of, it's, I can see this is almost kind of creepy to them, you know, because
you've watched their every move. Yeah.
And so, and they obviously, they have sort of no idea what I'm doing. And also maybe we've just watched, you know, the premiere, the first, and this is often when they actually see themselves the first time, you know? And so they are, of course, not interested at all in the music, because they want to see what they look like on screen at that stage, you know. So, yes, I mean, in particular, you know, the character of Charles Sobhraj was, you know, it needed some thinking before just how to score that, because, you know, we could have done it a bit like Catch Me If You Can or something like that, you know, like a sort of cool con man, you know, but it would have been so wrong to do that, but also because this guy is a super brutal killer, and there is, in a way, there is nothing to celebrate.
Yeah, you need that darkness.
Yeah, but, you know, what kind of darkness? And yes, I mean, I think the way Tahar played it is, you know, it was very cold, you know, and which was right, I think, you know.
That's really interesting to kind of, you know, particularly with the period that it's set in as well. And when you think about the kind of the musical landscape of that time sort of thing, and the idea that, you know, he, on the kind of the surface level, he is this kind of suave, really impressive, charismatic, you know, charmer, really, the sort of man from Uncle kind of sort of soundscape could almost be his, you know, his sort of walk on music, so to speak. But I think what's so brilliant in what you've done with the score is that you kind of almost removed the period element of it, you know, in terms of the score is not matched with the period. It's something completely different, and it works so fantastically. The pulses and the drones and the deep strings and the kind of ambience that you've kind of created just adds to the journey and the kind of, and like you say, that darkness element to it, whilst all this colour and, you know, because it's so such a sensual film as TV show as well, you know, in terms of, you know, the colours and the clothes and the busy streets and the temperature and all that. You can feel it and smell it almost whilst you're watching it. But the score just puts this weight on you. So works brilliantly.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was, you know, to do a kind of 70s kind of period soundtrack, you know, for something like this, yeah, maybe you could have put some kind of funky kind of rhythms and some baba guitar and whatever and things like that, you know, but this would have sort of evoked a kind of nostalgia, really, which was, we don't want, you know, just, it's not going to work. This is not about sort of how great the 1970s were. This is actually just how horrible they were, or how dangerous, you know. So but also, you know, I wanted to have a kind of modernity to it, not just because we want to do it, make it modern, but because at that time, you know, it felt like we are entering a new age, you know, where people can travel on jets around the world and they can visit other cultures. You know, it was a real opening up and looking into the future then, you know. So I took some elements from the 70s that at that time would have probably felt kind of futuristic, you know, like there is a bit of influence of Philip Glass and kind of these high sort of bright organs and things, you know, that are fast and kind of exciting, and they still actually sound quite modern. You had a kind of avant-garde synthesis, you know, in the 70s that, you know, this is going beyond like sort of Kraftwerk and stuff, you know, just more kind of stranger, a more experimental stuff, you know, which was, I found, was quite a good way to score some of the kind of more psychotic elements of it, you know. Because I could do all that kind of the modern thing, because I knew we'd have some tracks in there. You know, I knew there'd be licensing of Led Zeppelin and Serge Gainsbourg and all that. And so that fulfilled all the period side. And so the, my score was free to, it didn't have to say period anymore, you know?
Yeah.
Gainsbourg et son Gainsbourg ont pris le ferryboat. De leur lit, par le hublot, ils regardent la côte. Ils s'aiment et la traversée durera toute une année. Ils vaincront les maléfices jusqu'en 70.
69.
Were you aware of the specific tracks that were going to be used at certain moments? So that because there has to be synergy between, you know, in the same way that you have, you know, a fantastic piece of score that that seamlessly links into Jenna walking down a crowded street where there's diegetic sounds and music almost kind of going on from the atmosphere. That has to work well with the choice of needle drops as well that are in there as well, you know, in terms of it can't clunk, it can't sort of jolt.
Yeah, yeah, very much. I mean, there's, you know, that, for example, practical things, you know, with a key and things like that. So yes, I was aware of which tracks were being used, you know, because sometimes I'd have sort of a segue, you know, in and out of those tracks. But also, maybe more importantly, it's sort of the whole, I don't know, there's a sort of tension curve of an episode. Mm-hmm. You know, then if we know that we've got a kind of jaunty Gainsbourg track in the middle, then it's okay to kind of contrast that with something that's more kind of scores the subtext, and you know, so in a way it's so yes, it's important. I mean, I wasn't directly involved in the choice, but we did talk about it before, and also Tom Shanklin and I are big Gainsbourg fans anyway, and stuff, so I knew that he was gonna want to put a lot of kind of 70s blues rock in there as well, so because that's his kind of thing, you know, so it was good. And also I then had to kind of make sure that I'm not sort of, you know, duplicating some of what's in those tracks, you know.
I wondered whether it was something that there was any kind of reason, because, you know, with the choice of those tracks, not all of them, but maybe some of them, of whether there was research done into, you know, the music that Charles at the time would be prone to listening to or be fan of.
Yeah, I don't know. They may have. I mean, when I started the project, you know, by then, you know, this had been in preparation about 7 years. So
wow.
So I Tom and I first talked about it in 2014 when we were doing The Missing. So, and then, you know, we got Richard Warlow, the writer on it, who we both worked with on Ripper Street as well. So then over these many years, they built up a Spotify playlist, which then they sent to me, and it was 37 hours long.
And 37 hours! Wow!
I don't think I ever got through that, you know. So, but there was...
That's like almost the playlist to get you through the pandemic.
Yes. So, yeah. So, about, you know, I still kind of sometimes looked in there, and there were some things that I just didn't know, and I thought, like, oh, that's interesting. And sometimes I mark one track because I sort of like an element. I like the congas on this,
yeah,
or I like this, you know, so we can then pick little elements, you know, from that. I started to make my own playlist as well. You know, there's some things that, you know, some kind of vibe that I wanted in there. It's, you know, like this thing when I was saying kind of, you know, looking into the future and stuff, you know, not to make it, I wanted somehow the spirit of Nico in there a little bit, you know, and but obviously you can't really do that without Nico singing. But then I discovered some videos of her like playing the harmonium.
Oh wow.
On some, you know, because yeah, so she was quite a sort of avid harmonium player. So when she was doing solo stuff, she often performed with a harmonium, and I play quite a lot of harmonium as well on soundtracks. I mean, I have like an Indian harmonium, and so, you know, I sort of try to copy her style a little bit of the playing. So that's in some of the tracks. Some of the cues now.
That's awesome. Yeah. And also, I mean, the production deserves kind of such praise for being kind of committed due to, you know, the fact that they had to shut down and because of COVID. But I'm so glad that the kind of dedication and commitment to the project was there from everyone, because it's such a fantastic piece. But boy, were they thrown some, you know, some hard sort of situations, really.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there was. I mean, it was even before COVID, you know, there was delays. There was
the monsoons in Thailand and yeah.
So there was quite a few hiccups. But, you know, everyone is quite experienced on this, you know, so it didn't, you know, it just sort of carried on, you know, and then it was. And then when, you know, March last year, when we all went into lockdown and yeah, they had to return from Thailand. Without having finished everything, you know, and then, but also we were right in the middle of post-production as well. And for a while, you know, we were just carrying on as if nothing happened, you know, and within one day I had to move my entire studio to home and get set up again. And within a day again, I was up and working again. It was actually really difficult. But then at some point, I think they just couldn't sustain the pace anymore, you know, because the actors were spread around the world, you know, in different scenarios of different types of lockdown. And, you know, there was no ADR, wasn't possible, you know, the dialogue replacement. So they were being sent equipment to record it at home and, you know, blah, blah, you know. But then that, at some point, I think they just had to accept that the whole thing is going to take quite a bit longer, you know. So and then I think it was extended by about 6 months again.
Can we talk about the theme for the show as well? Because the theme song, where do you start when you have the job of writing a theme song for a TV series?
I don't really. I write some themes, you know, it's almost, we always decide later which one is going to be the main theme.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And really what's actually happened was what's now the title music theme was a theme that was more for Herman Knippenberg. You know, it was because it has that kind of a sort of American minimalist or also there's actually Dutch minimalist style, you know. So there's some of that, you know, that kind of pattern and rhythm sort of semi-polyrhythmical stuff. And he has a few themes a bit like that, you know, that are, again, they're kind of slightly futuristic and busy and kind of cerebral, you know. Yeah. But then they had already some footage or some kind of a rough, you know, sort of graphics and stuff, you know, the kind of collage type thing. And so we tried, you know, 2-3 of my themes and then that kind of flowed okay. But then it was a different kind of arrangement. So then we thought, no, we need to bring in Charles into this as well and Asia, because it had a Western orchestration. So that's what I did, and in fact it was even the kind of make it all quite Asian, that wasn't even my idea, that was one of the execs. He said, let's make it really crazy Asian or so then I recorded this whole thing with like gongs and things and then added these kind of low string and horns and that kind of dark underbelly. It was a kind of, you know, it was a collaboration and it was a sort of manufactured from an existing theme. Because that's often how, I guess, how I do it, you know, on something like, I don't know if you've seen any of Ripper Street.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's got like a fiddle theme. And again, that came out because in the first episode, the first victim, you know, in the first episode, she was a violinist. So, and then I had some themes for her, you know, kind of like for her in her death and, you know, some kind of sad and dramatic fiddle stuff. So then I kind of jammed in the studio with the violinist and said, well, let's maybe try and expand on one of the themes. Yeah. And then this came out really well. And then we thought, oh, that could actually make a good title theme. So it sort of often comes out of something else.
Thank you. interesting though, because it's such a, it's so striking as well. And now that you, now that you've talked about it, understanding that it represents the narrative, you know, the sort of the different characters, the main characters within the narrative, is so clever.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite blatant. I mean, the way it's sort of, if you remember how it sort of goes, because it has that kind of, each phrase is repeated in a different way. It sort of has that kind of do-do-do-do-do, and then it repeats, but in a really dark way. So it's like a dialogue between, it's like a sort of call and answer between Charles and Herman, you know?
It works very well, I love The Missing as well. I was such a fan of that show. I thought it was really great, and a very different, you know, in terms of how personal that story, that kind of almost story is. You know, it's, The Serpent is so kind of brash and colourful, and, you know, there's so much kind of noise, whereas The Missing is this kind of almost slightly timid, shaking, terrified thing in a way. But I just thought it was great. I loved that show. I thought it was so good. I was very happy as well when we got the spin-off as well with Baptiste.
Yeah, I'm working on this. Right, it's on the screen right now here. Yes.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's the new series now. That's, I guess that'll, I don't know when it comes out, but it's going to be very soon, I guess. So.
Right. Oh, that's great news. It's always so heartwarming when we hear of, you know, productions that have managed to finish and that we can, you know, because have you been able to keep busy and plenty to do, I imagine, lots of projects on the go throughout this time, but just not in your studio, I guess, more at home.
It's been definitely busy, but I, as mentioned earlier, you know, this kind of slowdown of The Serpent was actually quite nice, because also it normally, this sort of thing becomes really stressful, because you have the next project. And then if one of them is delayed, then, you know, it starts to clash really badly. It's something that you planned really nicely before, and then it all falls apart. Yeah. But this time they were all delayed, you know, so it didn't matter. And I quite, you know, because normally I have to basically write one of these episodes, I guess, in about a week, and then have another kind of a day of revision. 1-2 days recording, a day mixing. So basically, in the end, you know, out of a 2-week turnaround, you have about a week to write it. And so that's fast, you know, for writing 45 minutes. But this is pretty standard in TV, you know. And suddenly, I kind of doubled that. And so it was great, you know. It was, we could try out, and I could try some new sort of instrument things and synth programming and things. So I quite enjoyed that.
Before we run out of time as well, I just wanted to quickly mention Elizabeth Is Missing, which was a stunning piece of work, you know, the whole thing. And it was, I mean, seeing Glenda Jackson back on screen as well was just a joy. And I was hosting the Scottish BAFTA Awards, of which she won Best Actress. Yeah. And I got to do a Zoom little kind of conversation, well done to her. And she was just... she was everything I kind of wanted her to be.
Yeah. Well, she's everything but the character she plays, you know. Yeah, certainly not you. Suffering from dementia.
But such a, I think such an interesting narrative around the whole area of, you know, of dementia, and I wondered what your memories were of, I know it wasn't that long ago, but of working on that and how that approach for Elizabeth Is Missing was.
It's interesting because I initially we sort of read it and looked at it, and I thought, oh, that's really interesting. And my first ideas were that it could be, you know, how to put the dementia into music and stuff. And I made some themes like that. And then I played them to Aisling. And I mean, she was all right. She says, like, just forget about the whole dementia thing. We're not doing that. You know, it's about the emotional, the emotional journey that she then goes on with rediscovering, you know, and so we can, in terms of the score, at least we can actually completely ignore that, you know, which was the right thing, you know. So, and again, you know, it was because it sort of cuts between the flashbacks, and I mean, there's the present, and then there is the past, you know, which going back to the 1940s. And then the score, of course, you know, helps you to transition. So it's, again, it's like with other shows that have multiple timelines, you know, it's sort of the music is not there to separate the timelines, but it's actually to bring it together, because it's one and the same story, you know, so you can have sort of the way you transition in and out of those flashbacks is, that's where I think it becomes really quite interesting. I mean, but if you watch The Missing as well, you know, there was a lot of that going on there, you know, and if you're going to watch a new series of Baptiste, there'll be a lot of that. And of course, The Serpent as well. Yes. I've become a kind of specialist in multiple timelines somehow. Yeah.
How many episodes of Baptiste is there?
Oh, of Baptiste, six.
Yes. Can't wait. Mm-hmm. Can't wait. Listen, it's so great to chat to you. I really appreciate your time, and also of giving me a second shot at this as well after I massively failed last week. So I really appreciate you putting aside the time, and it's so great to get to pick your brain about your fabulous creativity and what you do. Thanks so much, Dominic. Really appreciate it.
Okay. Well, thanks, Edith. Good. Nice talking. Yeah. Good questions.
Take care and stay safe. Thanks. Bye.
From his score to The Missing, that's Come Home featuring Anna Torsky, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with composer Dominic Scherer. My huge thanks to Dominic for taking the time to talk to us. The Serpent is available to watch now on iPlayer and Netflix, and I highly recommend that you do, with the new season of Baptiste beginning on Sunday at 9 p.m. on BBC One. Now, before we go, I wanted to draw your attention to a great service provided by Faro and Ball. I'm sure, like me, you have been staring at the same walls for a few months now, looking for new inspiration and maybe thinking about a bit of DIY. Well, I've just started making plans for a few changes in a few rooms in my house. And it's amazing what a lick of paint can do to lift a room or space, creating a brand new mood or feeling. But sometimes I struggle with what works where, and I can't make decisions on what colour to match with specific walls and surroundings. And that is where a Faro and Ball colour consultant comes in. Now, I had a lovely few hours last week with Paddy, thanks Paddy, who quite literally felt like a colour fairy godmother, making the most incredible suggestions and recommendations. So much so, even before I lifted a brush, I can visualise how it's going to turn out in glorious detail. It's very exciting. His design and colour expertise have been invaluable, from how light can impact colour choice to how colour can work on the size perspective of rooms. Paddy really had a wealth of ideas, and I can't wait to use them. I was already a big fan of Faro and Ball products, but I've been incredibly impressed and inspired by the personal colour advice that I've received. So why not book your in-home or virtual colour consultation today? The hourly cost for the tailored colour consultancy sessions is £195 for in-home and £130 for online. To find out more, visit the Faro and Ball website, faro-ball.com. That's faro-ball.com. And so to next week. So excited about this one. I'm joined by Kate Herron and Natalie Holt, the director of and composer for Loki. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.